www.donateyourcar.org/donateyourcar.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
On the count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.3 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain one of the largest industries in the country.
My people inside and out, where you at? You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal System Reform Report. My name is Andre Ward, and as always, excited to join this morning with the rest of the On the Count collective. Thankful to be able to be alive today to share news, commentary, and analyses around criminal legal system reform issues. And as always, remain in activist and advocacy mode, representing the issues that are most important to those who remain behind the prison gates and walls. We know that while you're there, we are with you in spirit, and we continue to work here on the outside to amplify the issues that are most important to you. And we ask that you continue to write to us, to contact us, and share your ideas and thoughts in the hope of us obviously moving those ideas along, so that we can make sure the right people hear those things that you have to share, and what you share contributes to ending mass incarceration and ultimately making sure that criminal legal system reform occurs. Going to jump right in, chat, and turn us over to the rest of the On the Count team. Marty and Harmony are here today. Want to obviously find out how they're doing and the rest of the On the Count collective. And then we're going to get right into our show. We have an amazing show today. So just checking in, Harmony, how are you feeling this morning?
Grand rising, everyone. Grand rising. Good morning. Good morning, my brother. Good morning, my sister. And to our guests who are already showing up early in the morning. Harmony is a little down because she couldn't get out this morning in that rain. You know how Harmony likes to go at least for a brisk walk and sometimes even a run. But shout out to my brothers and sisters who are inside. Yes. And a special shout out to our women who I know are listening this morning out there in Taconic. Yes. And to the officers who also make sure that they turn it on nice and loud out there in Taconic Correctional Facility, Bedford, Avion, and of course our young people, Horizons and Crossroads. And of course, I would not forget our federal institutions and also making sure that they listen to us this morning. So Harmony is very mellow right now. And I'm so happy to be here and welcome to you, you and you, my sister, Marty.
Good morning. Buen día, mi gente. I am feeling really, really good. I actually like being indoors with the rain. I have my patio door open, but I will be staying indoors today. And I'm really excited for today's show. Following up on what our brother Andre said, it is really, really important that you do write to us, follow us on social media, share your thoughts and ideas so that we can make it a thing. You can follow us on Instagram at OnTheCountWBAI, Facebook at OnTheCount Inc., Twitter at WBAI on the count. And of course, you can write to us at On the Count Inc., P.O. Box 406, Bronx, New York 10465. We will be repeating that information later on in the show. Again, thank you for joining us. I'm really, really motivated and excited for today's guest. And stay tuned. Andre?
Thank you for that too, Madi. And we're joined today by the executive producer, or rather executive producer, I'm thinking about the radio, but the executive director of the Correctional Association of New York, Jennifer Scaith, followed by Jennifer, we're going to have Grace Detravada, who's also going to be on. And then we're going to have Ron Bennett from HALA a little bit later on talk about the work that they're doing there. So Jennifer Scaith obviously is no stranger to On the Count. She's been here on the show on a few occasions. And currently, CANI, which stands for the Correctional Association of New York, has put out a report. So we wanted to learn about what that report is and thank Jennifer for joining us. Jennifer, again, Executive Director of Correctional Association of New York, formerly the Executive Director of Prevention, Diversion, and Reintegration at the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, just has a long history of working in the criminal legal system field. Jennifer, welcome to On the Count. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much for having me.
And for those who may not know a little bit about CANI, Jennifer, can you just give our listening audience a little context about the history of CANI?
Sure. CANI was founded in 1844 and 2 years later granted authority under state law to perform what today we refer to as oversight of prisons in New York. So we are an independent nonprofit organization based in Brooklyn. We're one of three such organizations in the entire country. And our access under state law, Correction Law 146, Section 3, authorizes us to go into prisons, talk to people about their experiences, hold confidential interviews, gather information. We collect administrative data from the Department of Corrections and community supervision, other state agencies. We're also authorized under law to carry out surveys. So we mail surveys to incarcerated people throughout the state. And then we formulate findings and recommendations in the form of reports that we issue to the legislature, the executive branch, and the broader public, in the interest of promoting transparency and leading to accountability for improving policies and practices inside prisons in New York.
And speaking of that, Jennifer, right, in terms of transparency, CANI just put out a new report, right? It's called A New Look at CANI, Oversight, Transparency, Discourse, and Accountability. Talk to our listening audience about this new report. What were some of its findings? How has this research and this kind of experience of what CANI has done is having some impact in some way?
Sure. So the purpose of this report, which is, it started out as an annual report, and then we just couldn't fit everything that we wanted in there. And so it became kind of an 18-month report. But the purpose was to articulate our vision for the future, the mission statement of the organization, and our strategic direction. We just recently adopted a new strategic plan to demonstrate how we work. Oversight is ironically such an uncommon and under-resourced area of the criminal legal system that a lot of people do ask us, well, what do you do? How do you work, and how do you make a difference? So we wanted to put together a report that sought to explain and demonstrate that. And then we wanted to showcase the enormity of the mandate, the thing that we are authorized by state law to do, and to describe the challenges. And so, you know, among those challenges, as you and listeners likely know, there are about 31,000 people in prison in New York. There are more than 26,000 state employees in docs who are employed at taxpayer dollars. The agency is a $3+ billion a year agency. We operate on a $1.9 million budget, 95% of which is privately funded. And the law requires us to monitor all 44 state prisons within a 5-year period. And then we give docs, per the law, a 60-day review period during which they can formulate a response to our findings and recommendations when we produce a report. So we just wanted to illustrate that in the 18 months covered by this report, we carried out more than 1,400 interviews with incarcerated people in housing units, mostly, but also program areas, clinical spaces, in 14 prisons across the state, and we issued 10 reports. So some of the key findings, Andre, that you asked about, you know, among the most serious concerns that we hear throughout the system are about medical services. So 55% of the folks that we spoke to across three prisons, Elmira, Albion, and Orleans, reported having experienced personally or witnessed an emergency medical or mental health situation. 58% reported that the level of medical care that they received was adequate. So that means that 42%, if my math is right, yes, were not receiving medical care that they felt was adequate. Those are pretty concerning numbers for us, and they're pretty consistent across the system. About 2/3 of people have access to the programs that they need. Again, that's kind of reporting on the positive side, meaning that 1/3 of people are either waiting for programs that they need, that they're mandated to complete in order to be eligible for parole, for example, or they're idle and do not have any kind of program, meaningful program assignment, and are spending a lot of time either locked in their cell or in a dormitory setting. So those are some key findings. And then, of course, you know, we hear a lot about concerns about retaliation, physical, verbal abuse, and the presence of racial animus in the prisons. So 45% of people across five prisons reported having witnessed or been personally subject to verbal, physical, or sexual abuse. The sexual abuse numbers being quite low, but when bundled together, verbal, physical, sexual, 45%, nearly half. And then 36% of respondents across four prisons reporting witnessing or experiencing racialized abuse, which could include discrimination, stereotyping, slurs, or other kinds of violence associated with racism. So those are some of the kind of key and I think most concerning findings, and the report highlights some others as well.
And Jennifer, you know, I mean, obviously these are some serious findings that causes major concern. And what are likely some interventions, right, that you think could happen to address some of those things? Certainly Candy's work is fundamentally critical, right, to ensuring that these things are made evident, right, in the world a certain way. But what do you think could be some interventions, right, to address some of these findings that you identified?
Yeah. So one of the key recommendations that we have made that has yet to be fully implemented is that there be additional government funded and provided, administered oversight over the medical services provided inside state prisons. So currently the State Department of Health has oversight authority over certain areas of medical provision, including for people living with HIV, people managing Hep C, and then during COVID, a modest bill was passed to expand the Department of Health's oversight over the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision COVID-19 response. We continue to call for oversight over all health services in the prison system. It is a largely paper-based system where medical records are in folders that literally have to be mailed when a person is transferred from one prison to another. It makes it very difficult for example, the Office of the State Comptroller to do any kind of audits of medical care being provided because of this antiquated system. So some basic oversight by health professionals that is government authorized is essential. And then to address the other point, the department prior to COVID had put out an RFP for transition to an electronic medical record. We regularly speak with doctors, health care providers, and administrators in prisons around the state who unanimously report that having an electronic medical record would make coordinating care and providing good care much easier. You know, on the program side, it's great that two-thirds of people that we speak to report having access to the programs that they need. That doesn't necessarily mean that those two-thirds are enrolled in the programs. They might have been program satisfied, to use the term that is often used to refer to people who have already completed their mandatory programs. We think that programs are a win-win-win, right? They provide meaningful opportunities for people to be engaged, to learn, to contribute. They also increase safety in institutions, not only because people are engaged in meaningful activities, but because they engage staff. Staff come to recognize the importance of programs, and it humanizes incarcerated people and staff in the process. And of course, it has benefits well beyond. We know that children whose parents are incarcerated take notes from their parents who are pursuing their higher education, for example, and their outcomes are improved. Programs and programs not just led by the state, but in partnership with community providers, higher education providers, and peer-led programs, because we know that there is a vast amount of knowledge, expertise, and leadership among incarcerated people that should be leveraged in order to help build the kind of community among people who are currently incarcerated.
Yeah, Jennifer. Yeah.
Please.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, and then to address the physical, verbal, sexual abuse. I mean, that this is a allegations of racial animus. I mean, you know, this is a complex system. I'd love to come back and maybe spend the full 15 minutes talking on that area. Obviously, cameras need to be installed in every prison, in every area where incarcerated people are housed or served. And there needs to be broad-based cultural change in terms of training, recruitment, and support for staff in their role. And a rethinking of the purpose of prisons so that they are not perceived by our culture and our state as sites for punishment, but rather as institutions that, while we're using them, provide places for people to heal and build skills so that they can come home safe and contribute.
Absolutely, Jennifer. And tell us what's on the horizon for Canny, like what's some of its future work and how can people actually get in contact with Canny?
Yep. So for the people who are listening, who are currently incarcerated, we do accept collect calls. For now, you would need to put our number on your call list, but that number is 212-254-5700, 212-254-5700. And our mailing address is PO Box 793, Brooklyn, 11207. On the horizon for us, we're expanding the network of stakeholders by recruiting volunteers from around the state and from different sectors. So the faith community, business leaders, and maybe non-traditional prison monitors, for example, prosecutors who, you know, have a role in sending people to prison, but largely do not come to prisons to observe conditions. We are making our reports more accessible through a variety of means, including kind of streamlining them, bubbling up the key findings, including more data, getting them into law libraries is on our agenda. And then we are looking to increase accountability for the conditions that we see and the changes that we call for by one, implicating more people in the work and helping people understand that what happens in prisons affects people beyond the walls of prisons, and arming people with more facts about what's happening in prisons now, so that they feel informed and able to identify the issues that they care about and use them in their advocacy, use them in their engagement of legislators, use them in their research and writing, et cetera. So we have lots of plans and encourage people to stay in touch with us and provide their input.
Jennifer Scape from Correction Association of New York, thank you so much for joining us here at On Account. We're going to have you back. Obviously, I know you have some quarterly updates you do as well. So we're definitely going to have you back here on Account so that our listeners can be updated about the work that Canny is doing, some of its findings in the prisons, and ultimately how those conditions are changing for the worse or for the better, in which case we would like to think it would be for the better. So Jennifer, again, thank you so much for joining us. We certainly will have you back.
I look forward to that. Thank you.
Absolutely. We're going to transition now to our next guest. And Harmony Amadi, how are you feeling?
Feeling great.
Great. We're going to transition now to our next guest. You know, this month is considered Pride Month. And here at On the Count, we acknowledge members of the LGBTQIA plus community. And we're joined by Grace Derivara, who is a regional and nationally recognized transgender, gender nonconforming, nonbinary, and intersex people advocate on health, HIV, MPOX, STIs, reentry, and for those LGBTQ, TGNCNBI, individuals, families, and communities that are affected by the criminal legal system. And so Grace obviously has been around for some time doing this work. Grace is a member of the Bronx Borough President's Office HIV Roundtable and was appointed as the transgender, gender nonconforming, nonbinary, and intersex person to be a part of the task force there for Rikers Island. And that came about as a result of the death of Laylene Polanco, a transgender identifying person. And Grace was on the cover story for national release of ANU magazine in February of 2022. Has been involved in a series of articles and essays that's been written, has been featured in FX television docuseries Pride, episode 4 of the 1980s, The Underground, which is now streaming on Hulu. Grace is also, like, you know, talented and really proactive in LGBTQIA plus individuals work and for the White Shirt Project, which is PTSD photojournalism project by Jose Ramon in 2020. And just as an overall advocate, and just want to thank Grace for all of the work that she does. And Grace, how are you feeling this morning? Welcome to On Account.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you. I'm great.
Great. And Grace, you know, this is Pride Month. And so although we know members of the LGBTQIA plus community identifies every day as a day to be honored and recognized, but especially this month, and for those who are in behind the gates and walls who are a part of that community, talk to us about, you know, the importance of the work that you do as it relates to representing the LGBTQI plus community. Talk to us about that.
The reason why it is so vital is because these are our regular individuals. These are our family members. These are our brothers and sisters. Due to one's sexual gender identity should have absolutely no bearing on survival and actually doing the things that everyone else has to do when you're behind the walls. And of course, when you return back to the community. So it is very important that the work that we all do, especially the Osborne Association, our affiliates and our partners. But again, it's very important because like all of us know, we want people to thrive. We want people to win. We want people to understand that your gender identity is just that. It's just an identity. You have to live, breathe, be educated, get an education. You have to do all those things to just to survive in this country, in this state. But because it's so important of those who are incarcerated, and especially in New York State, that there are people who are like myself and like you, who do come from lived experience of being incarcerated, who do have lived experience of how you deal with all those amenities and situations that happen to us while we're in custody, and prepare ourselves for how we adjust when we come home.
And Grace, you mentioned, right, of course, right, like any other human being, people should have access to the same rights and privileges and things that anyone should have, right, while they're incarcerated. From your experience, Grace, like what are some of the things that our members of the LGBTQI plus community are experiencing while incarcerated? What are some of the things that they need? What are some of the things that they've experienced and may be still experiencing while in prison or jails from your overall experience?
Well, primarily, it's always been about our safety. When you are placed in a situation of incarceration, whether it's as a detainee or an arrest or whatever, the first thing that we all are always concerned about is one's safety and that you are given all the amenities and rights and things that are necessary for you to survive in that hour, that month, that year, that decade while you're there.
Absolutely, Grace. And, you know, I know the work that you're doing and have been doing is hugely impactful. Talk to us about some of the work that you're doing now, some additional work. I know that you're with the Osborne Association. You're doing some work there. So talk to us about that.
Well, I'm involved with so many connections. It's about connecting to your community in which a lot of us return back to. I'm about, you know, reaching out to those agencies and those individuals and communities that actually empower us. And when I say empower, to just get those things that are relevant to our survival, things like having relevant healthcare, having relevant pathways to education, pathways to employment, even if that means entry level. This is a new time and a new day where one's gender identity is just that. It's just your identity. And once we are able to, and when I say we, I mean us human beings, our allies, those who give service, whatever that service may be, that one's gender identity does not become a barrier or does not allow us to be, it becomes the conversation. We want just what everyone else wants, and that one's gender identity, again, and I can't say it enough, that's all it is one's identity. So the things that I'm doing is that I'm connecting with other agencies and communities to where a lot of us are going to be returned to. We've always not had these conversations with our faith community, with our employment community, and not it be a situation where we have to make specialized introductions. And well, if we're eligible, if we are qualified, these are the things that should be focused on. So those are the things that I'm doing today.
Yeah, thank you for that, Grace. And I think Harmony had a question too, Grace. Harmony?
I do. Madi does.
Madi?
Yes. So I just want, I'm a firm believer in individuals having the identity that makes them happy and is true to themselves. And I just want to be able to promote your events. How can people contact you on our website? So if you could let us know so that we could let folks know of all the behind the scenes work that you're doing moving forward so we could announce it on air so that our friends, families, brothers and sisters are all aware of the fight that we're putting up for them.
Well, let's first do it this way. Let us start wherever we are, because I'm not the only person doing this work. I may Amen. Be the most popular right now, but let us be clear. Let us be clear that this is a collective effort. And yes. when there's a collective effort, we have to start from where we are. And because those who are in custody, this message is for you. I want you to go to your law libraries, to your general libraries and your facilities. And we have things like the connection book. We're there now. When we want to do things like we want to prepare for your return home, you can always call or email, or you can write the Osborne Association. You can also write me. And I have a website, but we won't do that right now because my message is always really for those who are incarcerated or pending to be released to society. I don't particularly, and I'm going to keep this on me, I don't particularly care for the amplifying one's gender identity, because that's, again, if that's all it is, I'm about, once you're in custody, that's what it is. You're in custody. So where do we go from here? And where do we go from here? We connect with where we're at. And then when we're preparing for coming home or being eligible for parole, that there are those agencies out here who can uplift you, who can sit there with you and send those letters of assurance and know that there are programs out here that are for us. But you got to open your mouth. You got to absolutely be proactive in your freedom and proactive in your need. So that's one of the things I want to get across. If you're here in society, you can always go to my Facebook page. That's Grace DeTrevera. And you can also see me on various platforms with other people like Jamani Williams and his LGBT health coordinator and the things that they do in the city here. I'm on every particular board that has to do with humanity. I am so against of throwing my character or my gender identity as that's going to motivate people. It never does. Let's motivate people who are, there's injustices going on with everyone, and that includes LGBTQIA. So those are the connections that is realistic for that community. And our allies are, and when I say ally, ally means connection. Speak up, say something, provide a service, an idea, a good word, a smile. Those are the things that when you're in custody or coming from custody that uplift you and keep you going, that it's going to be okay, because stigma is real. And stigma is sometimes given by various levels of stigma. People will see the person whose visuality of their gender is the first thing they see, and they stop watching and stop listening, and they just want it to be over with. So that is why I, like most of my collective efforts of people that I work with and agencies that we work with, that it is always imperative that we get to the meat and potatoes of things. And what's that? That's employment, that's training, that's education, that's housing, having all those connections of how to survive out here, because it ain't easy for anyone. And when there's stigma added to it, you got to be proactive, because if you're not proactive in your survival, you will go down the drain like anyone who's not proactive.
Thank you for that, too. And Grace, like, you know, if you had this vision, right, what would your vision be for your work as we get ready to end this segment? What would your vision be? And thank you for giving out your contact information for people to be able to access Osborne and others. Just what would your vision be?
My vision is exactly what it has been from the time for when I was incarcerated, that I just want, like most of us want, to have access to pathways, ideas are listened to, our needs are, and I say needs, not wants, our needs are valued and sought after by those who provide services, those who literally say that they care about human beings, not characters and gender identities, but where those who are incarcerated and those who are pending incarceration, that there are services that are impactful for their survival.
Grace Dechavara, thanks so much for joining us here at On the Count today. And we'll certainly have you back for an update about the work that you're doing. And I don't know if there's any announcements that you have to make for, obviously, this is Pride Month, any events or something that you may want to mention that's coming up. And if not, that's
fine.
Well,
I just want to also say this. Sure. I want to say this to those who are incarcerated, especially in state prisons and here in New York State. We also have at Osborne the CHI program, and that is something that will probably be posted in your law libraries. Review it, seek it, look it out, because there are so many things that are available to this community. And when I say community, those who are incarcerated, please know that that is the only announcement that I really have, and that I have a statement that I always want to say to those who are listening. Touch and release means this to all of us. You give the information, you show the pathway, and you step away. What we never have done in this community, and when I say community, incarceration is giving pathways. It was always, you're there, you're waiting to come home, you're hoping to come home, but no one was actually thinking of pathways. How do I do it? That is what's so important of all the work that we do. So I thank you all for inviting me, and I hope to be invited again. Bless all of you and keep your head up, because there's someone out here like me, Grace Dechavara, who's doing everything to make that sting of survival less penetrating than it has been. Thank you. God bless.
Assalamu alaikum.
All those great things. Good day.
Thank you, Grace. And so you're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. It's a radio show. It's called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal System Reform Report. We just heard from Executive Director of Correctional Association of New York, Jennifer Scaife, who gave us an update about the work that they're doing and a report that they recently published. And just now you heard from Grace Dechavara, who talked about the work that she does in supporting members of those who are incarcerated, and specifically those who are part of the LGBTQIA plus community. We're going to take a brief musical break, and then we're going to return back with Ron Bennett from HALA. Amadi will be talking with him in conversation. Don't you go anywhere. Make sure that you continue to support WBAI. Make your contributions, make your pledges, become a WBAI buddy. Make sure that you are invested as a true member of this WBAI community. And by you giving out of your private means, no matter how little, no matter how great it may be, to support this institution, WBAI, this radio show, On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal System Reform Report, give whatever you can to keep these things in existence, because it's so very critical that what you give is put to where it needs to be to sustain the efforts and work of WBAI. So don't you go anywhere. We're going to have this brief musical break.
So listen carefully. From now on, you have no path.
You don't say good luck. You say don't give up. It's the fire.
Remember, this is not a game.
Let it burn.
And if I'm ever at the crossroads and start feeling mixed signals like Morse code, my soul start to grow colder than the North Pole. I try to focus on the hole of where the torch goes, in the tradition of these legendary sports pros. As far as I can see, I've made it to the threshold. Lord knows I waited for this a lifetime, and I'm an icon when I let my light shine. Shine bright as an example of a champion, taking the advantage, never copping out or canceling. Burn like a chariot, learn how to carry it, maverick. Always above and beyond average. Fuel to the flame that I train with and travel with. Something in my eyes say I'm so close to having a prize. I realize I'm supposed to reach for the skies. Never let somebody try to tell you otherwise.
Let it burn. You don't say good luck. You say don't give up.
on fire, let
come
it
on,
burn
speak
higher.
Up like
I never show signs of fatigue or turn tired, cause I'm the definition of tragedy turned triumph. It's David and Goliath. I made it to the eye of the storm, feeling torn like they fed me to the lions. Before my time start to wind down like the Mayans, I show them how I got to grind down like a science. It sounds like a riot on hush, it's so quiet, the only thing I hear is my heart. I'm inspired by the challenge that I find myself standing eye to eye with. The move like a wise warrior and not a coward. You can't escape the history that you was meant to make. That's why the highest victory is what I'm meant to take. You came to celebrate, I came to celebrate. I hate losing, I refuse to make the same mistakes.
The fire.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. This radio show is called On the Count. And we just had a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous platform of professionals, leaders that are fighting for the greater good and for those that are behind prison gates and walls. So moving on to our next segment, we're going to have another leader, Ron Benet, from HALA. How are you this afternoon? This morning, excuse me.
good morning, peace and blessing. I'm doing excellent.
It's wonderful. That's wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for joining us today. So
no
for those of us that are tuning in for the first time, just give us a brief history, a brief synopsis of HALA and how you became involved in the cause.
So HALA is a nonprofit organization that was founded by five men who was incarcerated in prison. And the time while they was in prison, they wanted to create a solution to help to bridge the gap between young people and the prison system. And at the time while it was inside prison, there was denied when it came out, the co-founders came out, they created an organization, Brownsville, where they teach young people. Back then, when in the time, in 2012, they revamped their whole structure.
Ron, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you know, you're talking too fast for my listeners. They haven't the slightest idea. You are running. Take your time. Say it slowly so that they can, because you and the accent, I don't think they can catch up to you. So for us old folks,
okay,
a little bit slower. Thank you.
No problem. HALA started in the Otisburg Correctional Facility by five men who was incarcerated. And in that time, they wanted to build a relationship with young people. They was denied by the board. And as their co-founders start coming out, they started reviving the structure and they created a program, two programs, Healing Justice Movement, myself, and nine other young people joined the program. I joined them at age 21, and now I'm 30 years old. I transcended from there. I'm still in love with HALA. HALA's my boys, they're my forever family. Now I'm just continuing the fight that they taught me how to do, and I'm just building it with my community.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that. Talk about the very first episode. Talk to us about that.
I created a podcast called Urban Notes Podcast. It really says real people tells real stories through urban lifestyles and cultures. The first episode of the podcast was really talk about mental health and self-love. I'm on a journey as an undocumented person, navigating the whole, you know, commercialized, institutionalized correction of immigration system. And I try to find unique ways to engage relationship with the immigrant community, with our Black community, because oftentimes those relationships are never really solid. They always have a smoke screen. And I try to be the voices for our immigrant brothers and sisters who are like me, who may not got resources, or who may try to find resources, still not getting the resources they need to make them be flourishing in a society that often use stereotypical languages to deteriorate their mindset from being what they want to be, the true self.
Awesome. That's awesome. And how can people get involved with Urban Notes? Tune in, be part of the show, listen to you guys. How can folks reach out?
So Urban Notes Podcast is right now is on all platforms. There's specifically a platform right now that is hosted Urban Notes Podcast is Spotify. To get in contact with the Urban Notes team, just email me, myself at kieronsosa@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram at urbannotes1. And definitely we can build relationships. I come to you. I come to you. You come to me. Or we can do virtually. This is where open to anybody. I'm trying to build relationships with the undocumented, the Black community, brown, and all communities, all social identities. And I'm trying to really build a courageous conversation.
Thank you. And what are you doing now at the moment?
Right now, I am currently in school. I'm trying to get my GED. And I'm in spaces of trying to recreate a set for my podcast. So I'm looking for a location right now to where I can host my podcast, because I don't have a room to use right now, but I'm trying to get somewhere where I can actually host the event and keep the relationship and keep the community engaged in my work.
Okay, thank you. So do you have any final comments, any final words of encouragement for our listeners? Any final hoolahs you'd like to say?
One thing I will say, I'm a Bolivian. I was born and raised in Belize, and I'm a shout out to Belize. That's our world country. And I really want to build a relationship with my community back home as well. So I just want to shout out to everybody who out here listening, even undocumented, if you're formerly incarcerated, please reach out. Let's have a conversation. Let's build a movement on healing and positivity. And let's show that we can be resilient people, because I know we can.
Thank you so much, Ron. I appreciate that. Also known as K-Ron from Holla. But I appreciate that because I want to talk to our listeners a little bit about Ron is a young person. And you can find him in every borough. You can find him always working and reaching out to us, to his elders, to WBAI, to people who can help elevate his concern for young people who are undocumented. Now, we know that we had a lot of people come into our country from different places. It's all over the news that, you know, we have migrants coming in from this place and that place. But we also have young people who are here, who are already here, undocumented and looking for resources as well. So Ron came up with Urban Notes in order to highlight what is happening to young people and other people who are here trying to make sure that they get their services in place as well. Ron, have you seen any of the migrants reach out to you? The newer migrants, I would say, have they reached out to you and tried to get plugged in?
No, they haven't, but I would love to someone to point me in direction to come in contact with them, because I would love to do the work with. I'm trying to really build a relationship with the immigrant community this summer. Like, I'm really trying to be on the ground, in the trenches, doing the work, because I feel like the best way to get the work done is going into the trenches where people who are directly affected can build the relationship that you're looking for.
Absolutely. We're going to make sure to get you connected to the individuals on the ground. And so he said, on the ground and in the trenches. We appreciate your work, and we appreciate you being inclusive, like the others on this call, inclusive of everyone, and going out to make sure that we're not just talking about it, but we're being about it. So we salute you this morning, and also to Grace and also to Jennifer. Nice to talk to you guys, because we're doing the work and bringing on WBAI 99.5 this morning individuals who are actually making sure that it happens for others. And we appreciate that, and we highlight it. And we wanted to have all of you on for these different sections and different topics so that people know that we are everywhere doing everything that we can for those who unfortunately have done something that they may not be so proud of. Monty?
Yes. So as we say in closing, don't give in, don't give up, don't give out, stand tall in spite of it all, and stay on the count.
Woo-hoo! Thank you.
You can have all the money in your hands, all the possessions anyone can ever have, but it's all worthless treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. You can have everything. What does it mean? It all means nothing if you don't stand up for something. You can't just talk the talk. You got to walk that walk. Yes, you do. Look in the mirror, proud of who's looking back at you. Define the life you're living, not by what you take, but what you're giving. And if you bet on love, there's no way you'll ever lose. Take a stand, make a stand for what's right. It's always worth, always worth the fight. It all means nothing, yeah, if you don't stand up.
Just to take a stand, the greater plan's the creator's plan. Let's all rise like the day began. Reach out and touch with the savior's hand. On rock we stand like this native land. Let the ways of love be the ways of man.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. On the Count came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Normally, at 11 o'clock, you'd hear from the streets with Bob Law, but that is not on today. Bob is on hiatus, and expects to be back with you at some point this summer. In the meantime, we continue our weekly series of readings of The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. It comes to you from our sister station, KPFK in Los Angeles. So please, stay tuned.
I'm Susan Charlotte, and I wanted to let you know about a new play I've written called Unlucky Gal, the Jane Doe Story, based on one of the cases represented by legendary lawyer Martin Garvis and directed by Anthony Marcellus.
We can revisit Mike McAleary's life and death on Broadway thanks to Nora Ephron's play. But who will tell us Jane Doe's story?
Tune in to listener-sponsored WBAI Playhouse on Saturday, June 24th from 8 to 10 p.m. and listen to the extraordinary story of Jane Doe.
I have had the misfortune of being raped twice.
Raped twice? I was dumbfounded. I waited for her to continue.
Once in the park and once in the media.
Across the country, we're witnessing an unprecedented number of bills that attack LGBTQ rights. That's threatening the strides that have been achieved in the half century since the Stonewall Uprising. Join me, Jeff Simmons, and my co-host, Carlos Menchaca, for our annual Pride Month special, when we'll explore that landscape. We want to hear your stories, too. What you think it will take to make equality a reality for the LGBTQ community. Sunday, June 25th, starting at 8 in the morning, through noon, only on WBAI.
Greetings, Tri-State. Imhotep Gary Burke, Radio GBE Mind Flight on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. Pass the word and join us every Sunday afternoon, 1 to 3 p.m., right after church and after our early Wake Up Everybody show down the dial. It's culture, consciousness, community, and the special blend of infotainment and edutainment you've come to expect from Radio GBE. Sunday, 1 to 3 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM, WBAI.
David Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
Extinction Diaries. Plankton is the foundation of the entire planet's food chain. They are plant-like cells that produce a large portion of the world's oxygen and serve as food for krill, which are consumed by many species like whales, dolphins, seals, squid, penguins, fish, and even humans. Plankton have died off over 40% since 1950, and now ocean warming and acidification are accelerating that. Scientists have recently discovered that plankton are undergoing rapid and dramatic changes as they evolve to survive. They are also moving closer to the poles, where water is colder and more nutrient-rich. Some have moved thousands of miles from their historical habitats. Relocation and the decline in population are forcing species like whales and dolphins to search the world's oceans for food as they become increasingly emaciated from starvation. Scientists agree that plankton are pushed to the limit by the conditions in our oceans. Since plankton is the foundation of life, life on Earth shares the fate of the plankton. My name is Arna Oliveira, and this is a Small World Radio production. Extinction Diaries. The Spix's macaw was made famous in the 2011 Disney movie, Rio, when children of all ages fell in love with the animal. The movie is about the last Spix's male living in the wild and his adventure to find the last female. In 2018, the Spix's macaw was declared extinct in the wild. There's a small number living in captive breeding programs. The fate of the Spix's macaw is not a solitary event. Right now, one in eight bird species is threatened with extinction. A recent study in Europe found as many many as 36 pesticides in a single dead bird, and the problem could be much worse in the United States, where higher pesticide use is documented and over a billion birds have died since the 1970s. Over one-third of the North American birds are now threatened with extinction. Equally startling is the overall population declines. Many species have lost 70 to 95% of their numbers in the first decades of what scientists are now calling the sixth great extinction. To find out about species crisis and more, use your favorite search engine and visit extinctiondiaries.com. My name is Aaron Oliveira, and this is a Small World Radio production.